Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. With more than 30 weekly podcasts, HRN has something for every food lover. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org. This is Capri Cafaro, host of Eat Your Heartland Out. I'm excited to announce a special series of episodes that highlight individuals that are both involved in agriculture and identify as part of the LGBTQIA+ community. In this series of three episodes, we meet an agriculture educator in Michigan, flower farmers in Iowa, and a fifth-generation dairy, grain, and beef farmer in North Dakota. Agriculture is becoming increasingly more inclusive thanks to the leadership of people like our guests. For our first episode in the series, I'd like to welcome Anna Hankins and Shay Pesek, co-owners of Over the Moon Farm and Flowers. Anna and Shay are partners in work and life operating Over the Moon in Iowa. Well, Shay and Anna, thank you so much for joining the program. We're so happy to have you. Shay, I want to start with you because I know that you are a Midwestern native from Iowa and someone that grew up in the ag community that ultimately, I think, led you back to your roots. So please tell us a little bit about your experience growing up in Iowa and your experience with ag.
Yeah, so I was born and raised in small town rural Iowa. I grew up on my family's beef farm. And I spent a lot of time working with my family, raising cattle, and we also did corn and soybeans. And I was always really, really interested in agriculture, and I loved doing 4-H and FFA, and I was really involved with our county fair and the Iowa State Fair. And I always just had a really deep love and passion for agriculture. I knew that that was something that I wanted to continue in my life as an adult. And kind of as I've aged up, you know, when I was in high school and whatnot, I realized that I was a queer person and I had a lot of struggle and I had a lot of depression because I honestly didn't know any queer adults that were out in my community. I didn't know that that was even an option for someone to be queer and to be out in a small rural town, especially involved in agriculture. Yeah. I really didn't think that that could have been a possible option for me. And you know how it is with media. It's like all of the different things that I've saw on TV or that I looked on online about, it was like so much of it was very urban situations like the L word or like South of Nowhere or something. These media outlets were very focused towards queer people living their true authentic self in cities. So I thought that for me to be my whole true self, that I would have to move to a city. And when I graduated from high school, that's what I did. My mom is originally from San Diego, and it was kind of a natural flow for me to go there. And I went to college there. I went to San Diego State and I lived in San Diego for 8 years. But I always, through those 8 years, I always had a calling and I had a deep love for my rural community and for my hometown. And I think as I became an adult, I wanted to explore that as an option. I never had an experience in Iowa as an adult, and I wanted to see if that was something that I could do. And I always wanted to be more involved in agriculture. I kind of, I always had that just in the back of my mind that that was like something that I was really supposed to do. And so I moved back and I did some other agriculture projects, and it felt good and it felt really important that I move back to Iowa and be that mentor that I needed growing up and being yeah. really out in a sphere of agriculture and being in a public environment. It felt really important to me, and it still does. And it feels like it's, yeah, it's just really important for our business to be that kind of role model and mentor that I needed growing up. And I think it's just, it's been really great to have a lot of the support in the community. And yeah, and we, Anna and I started Over the Moon in 2018, late 2018. And then, yeah, we started our business together, and it's been a really great experience to be an out couple in agriculture in rural Iowa.
Well, you've said a lot of really important and really powerful things there, Shay. And I, you know, a few that just really struck me, first being that you are so incredibly right that media is absolutely portraying, you know, out people having to go to the cities in order to be, you know, their complete self, their authentic self, you know, and, you know, being able to enjoy life and pursue their passions. But, you know, you recognize that there is a necessity for, you know, being that role model in the, you know, in a more rural community, one that you didn't have. And, you know, you're playing an important part, and your business is playing an important part, and your partner in work and life is playing an important part in all of that as well. I want to bring in Anna, if I can, because I want to talk a little bit more about, the work that you do, Over the Moon, Flowers and Farm, and learn a little bit more about the business. So, Anna, first off, why don't you tell us a little bit about you? Because I understand you're not a native of Iowa, but you live there now.
Yeah. So I have had my own journey to Iowa. I actually was born and raised in central Massachusetts, in a suburban town, bigger than the town that Shay grew up in, but certainly not a city also. And I actually have also always had a passion for agriculture, a little bit different, again, from Midwestern agriculture, but I grew up feeling very connected to some of the local farmers in my own community. It was primarily dairy farmers in New England, and grew up with just a big love specifically of livestock, and ended up studying sustainable agriculture in college. I went to the University of Massachusetts Amherst, which is its own kind of small town agricultural community, but a very queer one at that. So I studied sustainable ag and kind of thought that the route for me was going to be working in the nonprofit sector or public policy sector. I was pretty involved in a variety of food and ag justice related organizing work with farm workers and with other student coalitions in that realm. But I thought that the nonprofit sector was where I had to find myself, because I didn't know that farming was a viable option, really. I was pretty heavily involved in the UMass student farm, where we like ran a CSA and had some firsthand experience learning what it might be like to run a farm, but didn't know what that future really looked like. So I actually moved to Washington, D.C. after graduating college and briefly worked for the National Family Farm Coalition, and found myself actually visiting a good friend of mine who I knew through some of that food justice work, who had just taken over a farm here in Iowa from a retiring vegetable farmer. And so I came out and visited her, and it was probably the first time that I saw like a young woman successfully running her own business and running a farm like that. And I visited her a couple times, and then I knew that I wasn't happy in the city, and I knew that I really wanted to farm. And I found myself like leaving DC to go drive around rural Pennsylvania. And when you start doing that a lot, you realize that maybe you need to make a change. And so yeah. I visited Iowa and in the fall of 2016, and I never left. So I've been here ever since.
Amazing.
Was lucky to meet Shay in pretty soon after moving here, and we pretty instantly clicked. I would say that our, yeah, if there's such thing as soulmates, I would say that we pretty quickly realized that that's what we were. So things fell into place together really quickly.
I love this. I love this. It's an ag story and a love story. I mean, yeah. It's all of the things. This is fantastic. And it's people moving into the Midwest, which we very rarely hear about, and moving into rural Midwest, which is less of what we, because I come from Northeastern Ohio, which mm-hmm. we have some significant ag, you know, rural aspects of Northeastern Ohio, but we're much more, you know, industrial than the rest of the state. And so, you know, we're always trying to, you know, get the brain drain and get, you know, attract people back and, you know, trying to be the next, you know, tech, you know, area or whatever. And we often overlook the value of the rural communities. And I just love that, you know, young people, women, you know, and queer community, you know, growing in these areas across the Midwest. So, you know, all of the things, and you do all of the things, or many of the things, as part of your business. You mentioned that you know, were really drawn to livestock, and you had dairy mm-hmm. farms around where you grew up. And it's my understanding that you also raise livestock. Is that right? As part of you know, what you do, in addition to flowers, which is obviously mm-hmm. part of the name of your business.
Yeah. So Over the Moon we do seasonal cut flowers. So from May through September. And then we also do chicken, turkey, duck, pork, and then we market beef that's raised actually by Shay's brother. And then we work with some other farmers in the area as well. But yes, so we have quite the diversified operation. And for us, part of that has been wanting to have a full-time business. So we're selling and marketing and producing 12 months a year, and that's allowed us to have Over the Moon be both of our full-time incomes. But we also are both animal people, and so raising livestock and producing food for people is one of the biggest joys I think that we both have.
Oh, that's great. And I remember when I had a chance to speak with Shay, and I can pose this to either of you, but I remember in our conversation that one of the ways you helped grow the business was to kind of latch onto kind of existing routes to market, so existing CSAs and some of those infrastructures there to get the flowers out and that sort of thing, which seems like a very good way to scale a business. Whichever one of you want to address that, I think, because I just think it's a good point that you're a new business, but you're tapping into that local network of existing infrastructure.
Yeah. So I would say that both of us really believe that the best way to do things is through collaborative networks of people, especially as young farmers, as young women farmers. There is certainly room for all of us here and room for all of us to work together. And, you know, things are better when you do. And so, you know, I would attribute a lot of our growth and I guess success over the last couple of years to really working hard to collaborate with other folks. So we have four other horticulture farms that we work really closely with, and they, in different capacities, we market both flowers and some of our meat through them. And not only is that market opportunity super important, but it also means that we're always connecting to people, to other farmers, and feeling that kind of support, because it can be really isolating to be a young person running a business. It can be isolating to be in a rural community. It can be isolating to be young queer people, et cetera, et cetera. And so running a business that is kind of built on a collaborative spirit really, I think, helps with some of those feelings and has helped us scale and grow pretty tremendously.
That makes a lot of sense. How far afield do your products go? How far do you sell? I mean, is it just kind of in the local region, or do you do more in, across Iowa, or do you ship out of the state?
Yeah, so it's a little bit of a mix. So our cut flowers are primarily just a local endeavor because of the nature of, you know, them being a really perishable thing and wanting to serve the people around us. But in terms of meat, we have a bit of a wider radius. We serve customers throughout Eastern Iowa, but we have also just begun shipping our pasture-raised poultry and pork throughout the Midwest. So just to the Midwest states right now, but we have expanded beyond just Eastern Iowa on that front.
What kind of farming practices do you use? I mean, non-GMO? Are you certified organic? How do you approach, you know, raising the livestock as well as, you know, obviously the horticulture side is a very, you know, different beast, so to speak.
Yeah. So we really believe that we are not certified. We don't have any certifications. But we, Shay and I really believe that our biggest asset that we can offer people and what we believe most deeply in is always making responsible choices and being able to share that transparently with our customers. Raising livestock or really raising anything involves just a lot of complex choices and a lot of gray area. I think we've talked about the media a little bit, but in general, like there can be a lot of like false information or, and we just really believe strongly that our best thing that we can do is tell our customers and show them. I really love social media. I do most of our communications and showing people how we raise our animals and what that looks like in the day to day, is really, I think, something that people can get from us that you can't get from just anywhere. But we also really believe strongly on the food front that we will never use food shame or fear mongering or I guess those are the two main words that come to mind to sell our meat products, because we understand and know that there's so many complex issues of equity, especially around accessibility and price. And so when we're selling our meat and scale, there's so many complexities. And so for Shay and I, we really just feel strongly that we want to show people what we're doing and we're really proud of the products we produce, but we never want, we never want that fear or fear mongering to be part of how we need to sell our meat. Cause we just, yeah, those issues are top of mind.
You've brought up a lot of really interesting stuff here, and I want to go back to this aspect of fear mongering and inequity and a couple of these other aspects. But I first want to ask about how you you said you want to be transparent to the consumer. How do you communicating your practices and your values and how do you actually do that? How do you present your information in a transparent manner to effectively communicate what you're doing to those that may be purchasing your stuff?
Totally. And so I am very consistent about writing a weekly newsletter where I always am sharing stories from the farm, whether that's, oh, this week we just got another load of day-old chickens and this is how we're caring for them and they're under heat lamps, and I include photos. And so I'm pretty consistent about updating people about where we're at in terms of the food that they're purchasing.
That's amazing. And that takes a lot, that takes a lot of effort that you do that. And who, not to interrupt, but who is, your consumer? Is it individuals? I mean, how do you find these people? I mean, that if you just were to buy something at a store, you might not necessarily know or be on an email list. So, I could understand if somebody was a subscriber or ordered a product, directly to them. But how do you actually reach those people?
Yeah. So again, it's kind of a mix. Like some of them are folks that are already connected to the local farm community in some way, whether that's that they get vegetables or fruit from another local farmer. And so they're already kind of interested in that. So they approach us about wanting to, say, source their chicken locally. Or they are folks that have found us through the flowers and they're interested in maybe sourcing some meat as well. We have a year-round monthly meat CSA or a subscription service too. So we have some folks that get a monthly box of meat from us that is a mixed species farmer's choice box. But we definitely also have quite the range of customers, I think, specifically because of our location in rural Delaware County. We have folks that are local to us that get our products that are, say, a night nurse locally, or we have some folks that are in the slightly more populated areas like Cedar Rapids and Iowa City who might be like young queer people. So we really have quite the range. But we also, in terms of showing our products and being transparent with people, I pretty much post on social media every day. Our Instagram, @overthemoonf_f, is pretty much, I joke that it's like pretty much a constant like live feed of like our turkeys because they're so funny. And I'm just like constantly posting videos of them and our other animals, but they're my favorite. So they maybe get more video content than anyone else. But we're pretty constant in terms of the social media content, specifically around the livestock.
I will say one more thing about this, because in speaking to, you know, a variety of farmers and people that work in and around agriculture, particularly when it comes to livestock, there is this understanding and sensitivity that, you know, there's a concern about, you know, misinformation that's out there about how livestock is raised and ensuring that consumers understand the bigger picture and what's really happening. And so I think that, you know, your Instagram turkey feed is probably a great way for people to kind of understand what's going on, which is just great. I do want to circle back, and we are running a little bit out of time, but I think that's important. I don't want to move on from your discussion around this fear and inequity, because, you know, the concept of, you know, food justice is something that it has been around, but I don't think has really found a voice until recently. You know, it has not been as pervasive in larger, more mainstream discussions. And I think that that's starting to happen, you know, in a meaningful way. And so, you know, in bringing this up, you know, you're obviously raising some issues, around food justice. And I just wanted to kind of get a little bit more, in the weeds about what you mean about, you know, you don't want to use fear, you know, and you're concerned about inequity. So what does that mean to you as you describe that?
Yeah. So, I personally, or Shane, I both, like, I never want someone to feel shamed, I never want to post something online or use something in my marketing that like puts, let's say, my chicken next to a like, we'll say Costco chicken, and then makes people feel bad because if they're buying Costco chicken because that's what they can afford. I don't want anyone to ever feel like their goodness or their worth or their morality as a person is based on whether they can buy my chicken or the Costco chicken. Because quite frankly, obviously, we know that our prices are set in a way that allows us to make a living, but we also know that they're much higher than a Costco chicken costs. We don't live in a perfect world, and we don't live in a world where we can just pretend that those issues of equity and access don't exist. And I just don't believe that anyone's worth as a person is based on their individual consumer food decisions. And so I'm really proud of what we do, but it just because you don't buy our turkey doesn't mean that you're not a totally worthy human and a good one. So,
yeah, I mean, look, that makes a lot of sense. And I think that there is that acknowledgement. And this, again, goes back to that sort of inequity in food justice. I mean, if it's not something that you can afford, you know, you shouldn't be shaming people because of their circumstance. And it's great that you recognize that and, you know, try to shy away from those tactics just to, you know, I don't know, put people in a position where they, you know, are almost guilted into living beyond their means. And what we do, I think we do find that there is a lot of morality and value placed around what we eat and how we eat. Sometimes we think about that in terms of diet culture, mm-hmm. or the latest fad of, you know, is it ramps? Is it kale? Is it whatever, you know? And so I think that that's a good lesson to learn and probably something that needs to be explored a little bit more.
Totally. And I think it's also important to just understand scale. Shay and I would say are at mm-hmm. the mid-size part of small scale. But we're also even in saying that, like, we're still raising so little on the livestock front in comparison to actually making a dent in our food supply chains. And so I think it's also important to just acknowledge kind of our smallness in the world. I think there can be a lot of, I don't know if self-righteousness is the right word, but I don't want to pretend like we're putting yeah. more into the food supply chain than we are, even though to us, you know, we've moved like 10,000 pounds of meat this year, but that's still very little in terms of actually feeding even our community. That's very little.
Sure.
Just being honest about that. And there's lots of really important parts of the food supply chain, from every person who works in it and who's every hand that touches all the food that goes into feeding people is so far beyond just our little small scale.
Well, you can tell that both of you have been very thoughtful in how you've pursued your business in agriculture and how you interface with your consumers. So I just have one final question for both of you. And we have a very wide audience to this show. So, you know, lots of different type of people could be listening. And if there's someone out there that, you know, is in your shoes, you know, that may be a queer farmer that is looking to get started or wants to get into agriculture, or maybe even thinking about, you know, what would you have said to, you know, your younger self? What kind of advice would you give to someone that wants to kind of follow your path? I guess, Anna, I've been talking to you. I'll start with you and then you can hand it over to Shay.
So I think the piece of advice I would give to people would be to find mentorship. More than anything, I think that has been so, so important, having people to ask questions to, having people to support you on those really hard days, because there are a lot of those really hard days. And Shay and I are so lucky to have each other, but also so lucky to have built a network of people. And that network has certainly reaches beyond Iowa. So I'm so grateful for the people that always pick up the phone when we need help. And I think the togetherness both between us, but also togetherness just amongst our various communities is absolutely key.
Yeah. And I think I have to add that there is a place for queer people in rural communities, and there are people that exist in these rural communities. And there's a place for all types of people within agriculture. It's something that even if you're not directly wanting to maybe farm or something, there still is a place for queer people in a lot of these other environments. It can be a struggle for sure, but I think it's important to know that you're not alone, even if you don't necessarily see queer people in your community or know of anyone. We do exist. We're here. People like Anna and I are, I'm sure, all over. So you're not alone in your communities, and you can feel free to reach out, you know, to other people that you might know. And people like us, we have people contact us like very frequently, like that are happy to know that we exist and that, there's people that are queer and in agriculture and farming, and we are like developing business and creating a family in these small rural communities.
Fantastic. Great advice. And certainly for our listening audience, now you've put it out there. So, you know, you never know, somebody might be dropping you an email and tracking you down, or maybe they'll slide into the DMs for, you know, watching the turkeys. You never know. asking for some advice. So to both of you, Shay, Anna, thank you so much for sharing your story with me and with the listening audience.
Thank you so much for having us.
Yes, thank you.
Eat Your Heartland Out is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.